News from NPR is made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
WILL's vintage vinyl sale is this Saturday, May 21st, from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. at Lincoln Square Village in Urbana. You'll find thousands of used albums, most at just $1 a disc, plus CDs, videotapes, DVDs, and working stereo equipment. So whether you're looking for big band, Motown, jazz, classical, Broadway, or pop, you'll find plenty of collectible bargains at Vintage Vinyl this Saturday from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. at Lincoln Square Village in Urbana. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Coming up in just a moment, Computers and You, a topic we take up once a month on the third Thursday of the month. Peter Kimball is with me in the studio this afternoon to take your phone calls about computers. Before we talk to Peter, though, a reminder that a severe thunderstorm watch is in effect for Champaign, Coles, Douglas, Edgar, Moultrie, and Vermilion counties in the WILL severe weather coverage area until 7 o'clock this evening. The Storm Prediction Center has issued this severe thunderstorm watch for portions of east central and southern Illinois, effective until 7 o'clock this evening. Hail to 1.5 inches in diameter, thunderstorm wind gusts to 70 miles per hour, and dangerous lightning possible in these areas. The watch includes Champaign, Coles, Douglas, Edgar, Moultrie, and Vermilion counties in the WILL severe weather coverage area. And again, it's in effect until 7 o'clock this evening. Stay tuned to AM 580 for the latest on the weather. Well, as I mentioned, today is Computers and You Day here on the Afternoon Magazine. This is a topic we take up once a month on the third Thursday of the month. Peter Kimball is our guest this afternoon. He is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the FAST 3 Consortium, Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. Listeners, I welcome your questions about computers for Peter Kimball. You can join us with a telephone call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Peter, good afternoon. Welcome back. It's good to see you.
It's always nice to be here.
And where would you like to start today?
Well, there are all sorts of bits of news about. One of the things that a lot of people may be aware of if they're running the Mac is that the new version of the Mac OS has come out. You can now put a tiger in your tank. They keep naming them after various large cats. One wonders how far this will go, but I was just looking this up recently. I couldn't remember them all. Starting back with Mac OS 10.0, it was Cheetah, followed by Puma, and then Jaguar, and then Panther, and now we're up to Tiger. They're running out. They're eventually going to have to go to, you know, smaller cats, I think.
Leopard?
They haven't done Leopard. They haven't done Lynx. Of course, you know,
Bobcat.
If they do Leopard, that might be too much of a change, you know, changing spots and leopards and things of that sort. So,
so this new system, what's the buzz?
Well, the buzz is it's excellent. It makes a lot of improvements. Of course, Apple has stopped making it available free, so anybody who wants it, there's not even an upgrade price. It's $129. Is it worth it? If you're doing some of the high-end work, if you're doing a lot of audio-video work, it's certainly worth looking at. And there are a few things. If anybody has been using it, it's always a little bit risky to come out with the very first version of a release. This is the Apple OS. Tiger is also called 10.4. But just as of Monday, they released a 10.4.1 release, which fixes some of the various bugs. So anybody who has already got Tiger should update to that.
Okay, very good. Well, we've got a couple of listeners ready to talk with us. Let's go first to the toll-free line, line 4, a listener in Indiana. Good afternoon.
Hello. If you can answer this question, or if you want to, this is not exactly exactly on computers, but has to do with DSL also. And this is anecdotal and very fresh. I'm in the process of upgrading my Verizon broadband, and they send out little emails to tell you, you know, when things are ready to go. And the first time was Tuesday night, then the email was that it was couldn't do it then, that it was Wednesday night, last night. So the real technician, Lynn, of the family, got on with them. She was on the telephone for about 4.5 hours and doing various things, being told certain things and do this and enter this and take that off and do this. And finally, it still didn't happen, so they the girl in the end said, well, pull your modem out of the outlet circuit and for at least a half hour, then plug it back up. It'll probably work then, because what it is the old software from the original broadband is interfering somehow with the new one. So we did that, and of course it didn't come on. We couldn't get online, so I called the telephone number and talked to an entirely different person. And we went through some things on the screen, and he said, tell you what, he said, those engineers are always monkeying around on the day that you are to get your upgrade. He says, try it again tomorrow. He says, they'll be off of it, and it'll come right on. Well, this morning it didn't come right on, of course. So I called and did some yelling and screaming and got somebody who seemed to know, you know, knows things very well. You know, do this, do that, do this, do that, do this, do that. And I was very confident. Then at the end, he said, what's the problem is zone alarm is a firewall, and it's stopping the signal from coming in. And he said, so I'm going to give you a telephone number to call the compact computer people, and then they can go through with you how you can set things up on your actual computer to, in a sense, I guess, go around this problem. Well, I called up Lynn and told him what they said, and she says, She says, I tried all last night with zone alarm off and couldn't get on. Just turn that thing off, wait a few minutes, and turn it back on. Dead came, and all of a sudden we're on the Internet. I was wondering if you could have any kind of commentary on that at all.
Well, it's good that the story finally has a good resolution.
Yeah.
There are a lot of complex interactions, and several of the steps that you were told to follow are actually quite reasonable. Shutting the power off and unplugging the modem for some time, allowing make sure that, that there's not a residual charge so that any reset really does take effect. Half an hour is a little extreme, but they want to really make sure.
Mm-hmm.
Zone alarm can certainly interfere if it has not been properly configured with the recognition signals that are going back, because the software on your machine has to identify itself to the appropriate software at Verizon or at the DSL provider's end. Do I have a suggestion as to how somebody else could eliminate this entire process and just plug in and have it work? Not really.
I guess, well, you know, what I'm surprised about, I got three different answers for what was going on, and somehow I, you know, a brand name like Verizon, you know, that controls a large part of the communications in this country, has people who, you know, I guess you just say you don't know what the hell they're talking about, but... I'm sorry, this is a soapbox that I don't usually do this on the program, but as you can tell, I'm still pretty upset about it. We lost a lot of downtime and a lot of money. I got a small business run out of this thing. Emails, can't answer them, you know, things like that.
Sure.
And I was wondering, I guess more technically, isn't there, aren't they supposed to be, you know, guaranteed online, you know, so much percentage or something, the same like with telephone companies and things like that?
Not unless and you're asking, is there a guaranteed minimum level of service? And
yeah,
about the only thing you will find without paying fairly large sums of money for guaranteed uptime is the time that they are down, they will reimburse you for simply the cost of your service at that time, but not for any incidental costs.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for your time.
Sure.
Bye. Sure. A lot of frustration there.
Yes, when it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
And you get different or slightly conflicting or overlapping advice. And it could be that two or three of the bits of advice you'd gotten were appropriate, but just not sufficient.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line one in Urbana. Hi.
Hello. I think that's me.
That's you.
I'm a bit intimidated about this because I'm a babe in the wood about computers. But I do have one, and I've been using email for a few years. And at the moment, I use Hotmail. And very recently, instead of being able to sign out from it, I get a series of screens that come up. Normally, I would click on the sign out, I suppose it's an icon, and it usually went clicking away, and then I was it was gone. I was on Microsoft Network instead of Hotmail. But now I get a sign saying error in a red hand. The specified server could not be found. This is part of Microsoft Passport Network, I should say. And I don't really know what that means, but I can't get anywhere from it. It gives you two buttons to press, next, and it tells you how many errors you've made, and then it's got an OK choice. And another screen comes up when you press next, saying signing out. And that if you sign out of a site, you get a green check, and if you can't get signed out, they give you a red check next to the site's name. Well, I never had that. So it says press try again. So I try again, and I immediately get the error sign back. So I'm back to where I was, except now I've got error one of three. And it also gives you a little choice, need help signing out icon. So I tried that, and it just goes through infinite number of details about how to sign in and get a password and so on. I've never found the sign out help. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, the original error message that comes up in each case is something about not able to find the site, you said?
It says the specified server could not be found.
Okay.
Well, in this case, who's the server?
The server is the machine with which your computer is trying to connect, typically at the Hotmail or the Microsoft Network site. And I know that Microsoft has been making changes to their Passport service and are phasing out parts of it. Uh-huh. And so it may well be that there is an update. Are you able to eventually just shut the browser down and get out of this?
I just have to click out and I go out without signing out, then I've lost the internet and everything.
Okay, so you're connecting to the internet via...
Through the university.
Through the university. And so you're dialing up, and you connect through the university,
mm-hmm.
and then...
And then I get Microsoft Internet Explorer.
Sure.
And my son set it up so that I would immediately go to email, to the Hotmail site.
Well, what you might want to do, then, to avoid... Now, once you've lost the internet entirely, it depends upon... I haven't used Hotmail for mm-hmm. some time, although I played with it at one point. But my suggestion would be to, especially if your son has been able to go thus far with you, is to set it up so that once you dial in and connect through the university, that you're connected to the internet, but you don't have your browser automatically take you to Hotmail.
Okay.
Just bring up a browser. You could even bring up the U of I homepage or Google or anything else. And then when you start, when you choose by typing in the address to go to the Hotmail site, I would suspect that any errors that you would get if you simply close the browser, you're still going to be connected to the through the university connection. You'll have just closed that browser session. You might also inquire, and there is probably a submit your request for help kind of a option someplace from Hotmail that will make sure that you have the current account settings and such for your Hotmail account in case they've actually changed the servers.
Okay. I did try some another help screen, but I didn't get anywhere with that.
Well, try it once you are connected and the Hotmail screen comes up. You just close that browser entirely. You should still be connected not by logging off or logging in, because the log-off procedure may or may not be interfering. I would guess that once the browser is closed, you are still connected through the university. You are still, the modem is still active.
Yes, I think it is.
And all you will really need to do then
But I don't know what to do because I don't have any...
Well, at that point, what you can do is just click on the Internet Explorer icon on your desktop.
Right.
And that will bring up a browser, and you should be able to type any address that you wish because you are still connected to the internet. Connecting to Hotmail is just one of the services that is there on the internet. And if you close that browser, yes, it's good to have logged out, but if there, that's a separate problem than connecting to the internet. Logging out of Hotmail is not the same as closing your connection to the university and therefore to the internet.
Okay. Is it a really bad thing to just click off without signing out?
It's not the preferred way of doing it, but mm-hmm. since this is your own private computer and not a public computer, like at a public library or something, it's not inherently risky unless there's somebody else in your household whom you would not want to have access.
No, I'm the only person who uses it.
But then there's really no particular problem with that. Although it's not ideal, and it would be worth inquiring a bit more to see just what is necessary at the end of your Hotmail connection to avoid the error. But it sounds like there have been some changes in the way Microsoft is handling that, and that your software has not, or the settings in the browser, or your settings in your Hotmail account haven't been correspondingly changed.
Okay.
But once you've closed the browser, just open up another one. Okay. And then go to Google or go to wherever you may wish, because okay. your connection to the university will still be live and running.
Okay. I'll try that then. Your first comments made me wonder. I have a G4, a Mac G4.
Yes.
But my husband set everything up so that instead of installing 10 point something, which it came with 10.0, or I don't really remember if it was 10.0 or 10.1, he said there were problems with that system, so he's going to make it 9 point something like his. Well, now I can't run Virex anymore because it wants a more current operating
yes.
system.
Some of the earliest releases of Mac OS X, as any kind of software, did have some problems, but because it's now been, 4 years
right.
since the initial release of OS X, and there's going to be more and more software that simply will not run on the prior System 9 software. So the writing is on the wall. The time is going to come when you're going to have to upgrade. And you can upgrade either by just buying, check Apple's website, but you should probably have enough memory. Certainly the G4 can run it. It comes either for a low price of $129, which I know mm-hmm. is not that low, or it comes with a new machine.
Do you mean the one you just mentioned, the Tiger?
Yes, the current mm-hmm. version, which is by the number, it's 10.4.1.
10.4.1.
That's the latest update.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I think I probably should do that.
Well, that will solve a lot of communications problems.
Mm-hmm.
Because definitely OS X is much better at handling a lot of that, and other software is just not going to run as well as time goes by with the earlier versions. The same thing is true on Windows. People who are still running very early versions of Windows are having the same difficulty. Software simply isn't written to support them anymore.
Okay, thank you very much for your help.
Good luck.
Really appreciate it. Bye.
Bye-bye. Next, we talk with a listener in Bloomington, Illinois, on line 4. Good afternoon.
Hello. I just wanted to comment that I had some of the same problems with my Hotmail account.
Yes.
It was telling me things like I didn't have enough cookies, the cookies weren't enabled and so forth. And I finally did follow through, as she mentioned, coming to a page where it asks for registration, like you're redoing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the step I finally took. And after that, I haven't had any problems.
Okay, so find the page that essentially re-register.
Kind of, exactly.
And make sure that the new system knows exactly who you are and directs you to the right place. So that would be an excellent suggestion
as
well.
And I suspect that maybe it's their little house cleaning thing. They're verifying some of these email addresses or something.
Yes.
But it worked finally for me.
Good.
So.
Well, that's excellent suggestion. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we talk with a listener in Mattoon, I believe, on line 1. Good afternoon.
Hi there. How is everything going?
Good. Thank you.
I've run into a problem in the last, 3 weeks or so that I've talked to a few people on and can't get any help on this one at all, so hopefully you can. I do a number of image searches. I like to use Google's image search.
Yes.
And I have no trouble connecting. I have no trouble drawing up the images. But virtually every time I click on one of the thumbnails, then I get an error message that says there's a problem with the browser and it needs to close, and then it shuts down on me. It happens using Explorer. It happens using Firefox.
So you have the thumbnail. You click on the thumbnail to see the larger version.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing this while you are at the Google site, or have you already gone to the site where the image resides?
I do it off the Google site. Sometimes if I try to go to the site that's listed, I get the same thing.
This is odd, especially yes. because it is happening both with two entirely separate browsers, so we mm-hmm. can pretty much eliminate an Internet Explorer or a Firefox problem. The one, if you see an image, just forget about doing the image search. If you just are browsing someplace and find an image that is a link, like from one of the U of I pages, and you click on a small thumbnail, have you tried that? Does it happen elsewhere?
No, I haven't tried that.
My guess is that it would happen elsewhere, but it might be something that Google, it could either, there's two possibilities. One that come to mind. One is that for whatever reason, a file association, when you click on the image and it is actually a link to another file, like a JPEG file or, mm-hmm. or a GIF file or one of those sorts, and that is not being registered properly, and you're not able to see it. That's why I was going to suggest that you try this from a non-Google site. Mm-hmm. The other possibility is that Google is doing some of this with some underlying JavaScript, and there is some difficulty with your browser handling that JavaScript, although again, it's a little bit puzzling to me why we would have that both in Internet Explorer and Firefox, because they're approaching it with entirely different rendering engines.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first thing I would do is make sure that you can, in a browser, click on a small image and see the large one. I would also try this, right-click on the image, and then one of the choices that you may have would be, and I can't remember exactly how the wording is going to be on this, but if you have an image and you right-click on it, you can sometimes, do we have the option? I'm looking for an image that's a link here someplace. You can open the link in a new window.
Right.
See if that works.
Mm-hmm.
Or copy the link and then just paste that address in and see, you'll be able to do a little bit of detective work and find out what the problem is. And of course, if it worse comes to worse, once you've actually got the image, of course, then you have no problem. You can simply save it or do whatever you may wish
right.
with it. But I would try right-clicking and following the link separately and see if you can bypass whatever the problem is.
Okay. Because I have a My Yahoo page set up as my home page when I go online.
Mm-hmm.
And if I use their, and they have their search toolbar built into the page now, and I do not run into that problem if I use My Yahoo. It's only when I use Google. So I've even contacted Google, and I've got one response, but they're addressing problems of just linking to the page at
right.
all, and I'm not having trouble making that link. It's off the thumb.
Well, and you know, one wonders if there is a compatibility conflict of some sort between the specialized toolbars, the Google toolbar, the and if you have multiple toolbars running, that could also be where each of the browsers simply gives up because it's being told something inappropriate.
Okay.
So you might want to try installing, or try this on a little bit difficult to uninstall, but you could even try a brand new clean copy of a browser with no toolbars. Now, since you've already got Firefox and Internet Explorer, try Netscape or Opera or something, but don't add any toolbars to it.
Okay.
And see if it's a toolbar conflict issue.
Well, I was thinking about just dumping Explorer and then downloading a clean version of that.
That would, it's sometimes difficult to dump the whole thing, but yes, that would probably fix it as well, getting rid of any of those add-ons, because sometimes one company's add-ons, toolbars, special features, whatnot, may conflict with others.
Mm-hmm.
They can be handy, but when you have two or three, yes, it could easily, as I think about this, cause the sort of error that a browser simply can't handle, and so it says, that's it, I quit.
Well, when I do the Google searches, I go straight to Google.
Yeah,
I don't do it off of a toolbar built into the browser. I go to the Google website and
right.
go from there.
But even if that toolbar is installed,
mm-hmm.
it could be causing problems.
If I dump Explorer first and download a new one, will I be able to import my bookmarks from Firefox? I know when I installed Firefox, it automatically said, "Do you want to import all your bookmarks, because I have got a ton of them and I'd hate to lose them.
I am not sure that Internet Explorer will bring that in. What you should do is save the bookmarks before you dump your current copy of Internet Explorer. That you can do, and then you could bring them into the newly downloaded version.
All right. Thanks a lot for your help. I appreciate it.
Yes. Good luck.
Bye. Okay. Next, we talk with a listener in Peoria on line 4, calling on a cell phone. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I've had a problem on and off for a year or so. I'm running XP Home Edition on a gateway computer of moderate speed. I mean, it's about a year and a half old or two. What happens periodically is that I get a proliferation of background processes which seem to just plain crop up, and eventually the computer will slow down. And every rarely, it'll just plain entirely freeze up. And finally, in fact, just this morning I bought Norton 2005 System Works Premier, and I installed it this morning, and I'm looking forward to things being better. Before, I had just Norton Antivirus 2003. But the thing I really want to ask about, and maybe it has something to do with XP, I've never felt confident when I go Control-Alt-Delete because the computer has gotten itself slowed down. I'll see an incredible list of processes, but I don't always feel very confident about which ones I can just plain end or cancel or whatever. Is it likely that the Norton product I bought claims that it can help the computer run more efficiently? Will it be a good tool for solving the problem I've suffered from in the past?
Well, it can be. Let me ask, have you installed and do you run fairly regularly any of the anti-spyware programs such as Adaware or SpyBot?
SpyBot is the one that I had. And in fact, before installing Norton this morning, I uninstalled SpyBot because I wanted to make sure I didn't have anything resembling an antivirus program.
Right.
Well,
it sounds if there's a proliferation of processes that is simply slowing you way down, that is the most common one of the most common symptoms of software that you really don't want running. It might be adware, but if it's not popping up a lot of ads, it might also be spyware or trackware, the various names for software that's sitting there installed without your at least informed consent, although there are a number of ways it can get there. And that's why I would suggest, although Norton, the full suite of Norton Internet products can address this, and I would certainly suggest doing that. Both Adaware and SpyBot could be run separately from that. They're not antivirus software programs, so you don't have to worry about running two of them at the same time. They just run while the standard versions just run when you decide that you want to do a sweep of the system, and that's the first thing I would do to check. In terms of the processes that you see listed when you look at the task manager by pressing Control-Alt-Delete, and who knows what some of these are. Some of them are clearly necessary, others won't. What you can do is a Google search. Just type the name of the process, like SVC host, service host, which is a required process.
Right.
And you'll get a number of sites, and some of those sites will simply give you a list saying, this is a program, yes, you need it, or no, this is a software utility that was installed by the computer maker, but you don't really need it. And so you can look up the details that way, because I don't think anybody who doesn't spend all of their time debugging this sort of stuff is going to recognize too many of those process names their name.
The strange thing that happens is that I may at times have seen under the task manager something like 4 different service hosts.
Yes, and that's typical. That's not a problem.
Okay.
Because that has to be spawned a number of times depending on your various connections and what's going on. So,
now, is there among the pop-up blockers? I mean, were you implying that Norton offers something that will function?
I believe.
Like that?
Well, I have to check on the current Norton offerings. I'm more familiar with their antivirus product, but not their entire internet suite. But I would suspect, because almost all the companies are doing this now, that they will include spyware and pop-up blockers and detectors.
Right.
But certainly Adaware and SpyBot, 2 free downloads, will also do that. And it's well worth doing that periodically, especially if you have kids who are surfing, because they may click on a link and say, oh, great, I get this nice little icon or this nice little pointer, but they don't know that it comes with a payload.
Well, it's unbelievable the cascade of things that can come when you're...
Oh, absolutely. And so that's why something of that sort is really essential, unless you limit your visits on the Internet to just a very few well-known sites. And who can really do that, because you see a link and you click on it and you can't always trust the site to which you're directed?
May I briefly ask one other thing, and that is about a USB hub. I've now had two of them seemingly go bad, four-port USB hubs. Why will they fail as hardware? What will happen to them? Am I doing anything that could cause that to happen?
I've not had any problems with USB hubs. For those who are wondering, that's USB is a way of connecting a lot of devices to a computer, such as printers these days and scanners and cameras, and they can be connected in sort of a cascading series. So a hub would allow you to plug a device into your computer's USB connector and then have several additional connectors. These are powered from the computer, I presume. You don't have a separate power brick.
Correct.
For them. I do not know what would have caused multiple problems with it. Power surges can damage equipment that's plugged into the house current. But in this case, I don't have a real suggestion. Have they both been from the same company?
Well, I suppose. No, actually, they may have been two separate companies. But I do have an APC battery backup to protect both from surges and also.
So that shouldn't be the problem. And
right.
You may just be remarkably unlucky.
Yeah. Okay.
It could conceivably be a problem with the USB driver on your computer, but you know, I still don't quite see how that would cause problems with the hub, other than just the whole thing not working.
Well, thank you for your help.
Good luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye. This is the Afternoon Magazine. It's Computers and You. Today on the program, Peter Kimball is our guest. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line 3. Hi.
Hello. I was wanting to convert I have some cassettes and things. I was wondering if I could hook the my sound card microphone part to the cassette deck and then be able to convert them to MP3 files. And what software would you recommend to be able to record that with?
The short answer to your question is yes, you certainly can. The sound card simply needs to have what's called a line input, which almost all sound cards do.
Right.
The quality, if you are concerned with the ultimate quality of the of your MP3s, the problem is most, unless you've purchased a relatively high-end computer, most built-in sound cards, they handle the digital side of things just fine. But where the differences will lie is how well they will convert the analog, what's going to come out of your cassette deck, into the digital form. It's the analog to digital conversion. So if you were really wanting to maintain quality, keeping in mind that audio cassette tapes don't have an incredible amount of quality to start with,
right.
Then a separate sound card for $80 or $90 from Creative, the Sound Blaster line, or various others.
I have that already.
Okay.
I didn't install that because I already had it. I upgraded the computer and put it
okay.
in the board. Game,
yeah. Well, the software that actually comes with that would do a fairly decent job, depending upon whether you need to do a lot of editing.
Sure.
But in terms of just basic bring it in and convert it, I believe that the software that you'll find bundled with that Creative, with the Sound Blaster card, should include that. I don't know precisely what they call the name of the software, but...
Right. Well, it just comes with it already.
Sure.
And
that should, I mean, test that out. Given the original quality of necessity fairly low, because that was the technology of most cassette, analog cassette recordings, it'll probably work fine for you. If you wanted to get into more detailed sound editing, there is software available. I can't really make a recommendation, but just do search for sound editing software, and you will find all sorts of things. Software that ranges the price from $29 shareware up to a few hundred.
Sure. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks for the call. This is the Afternoon Magazine. It's Computers and You. here today on the Afternoon Magazine, a topic we take up once a month on the third Thursday of the month. Peter Kimball is our guest. He is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the FAST 3 Consortium Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. My name is Celeste Quinn. You can join us this afternoon with your questions about computers by giving us a phone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. No one waiting at the moment, so let me take this opportunity to remind our listeners that a severe thunderstorm watch is in effect for Champaign, Coles, Douglas, Edgar, Moultrie, and Vermilion counties in the WILL severe weather coverage area until 7 o'clock this evening. That's a severe thunderstorm watch in effect until 7 o'clock this evening. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and WILL.UIUC.edu. Let's talk with another listener in Champaign, line one. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I have a problem with, I have a high-speed DSL, the SBC one that's out there, global.net
yes.
setup. And I have a two-wire wireless system in my home. And when I set up my desktop computer, everything transferred just fine. When I go to my laptop in this new DSL system, everything when I go on, and they use Yahoo, when I go on Yahoo, the lettering is huge. I can't read more than two or three letters across my screen on my laptop. And I've tried everything. I've called them, and they said, well, go into your fonts and go into your, you know, the size of the font that you're using and all that sort of thing. And nothing else on the computer has to be changed. Fonts are working fine. I'm in the smallest font. I just can't do anything with it to reduce the size of the information.
So this is when you are surfing...
Even when I read mail, when I punch up my mailbox, for instance, it's huge, and my home page is the letters are just huge. They're almost 2 inches high, and you know, three or four letters fill a screen on my laptop.
And when you are doing anything else on your laptop, just
fine.
Word processing or anything else, everything is just fine.
Yeah.
This is probably not really related to the wireless connection, but that just may be a red herring. Currently, you have, I presume, your DSL plugs into your depending on how SBC sets you up, but
telephone.
That plugs in, it's via telephone, and your desktop computer then plugs into either the back of the wireless router or into the back of the SBC DSL modem.
Yes, in other words, I have a go directly from the laptop, go from the line to the laptop to the two wire system. And then I can use the two-wire system throughout the house for two other computers if necessary.
Okay. Well, here's what I would to try to isolate where this is. Since you've already changed the font size, this is a problem that I have not seen before or heard of before, and it's very odd.
It's been driving me crazy.
I can imagine. What happens when you, and this may be something to try, instead of, because your laptop also has a standard network connection, I presume, and if you plug that in, instead of having that go directly to your desktop, suppose you plug your laptop in that same way, temporarily unplugging your desktop, and then using your laptop to surf and see if the same problem exists.
Okay.
When you have just the same connection, exactly the same connection, I suspect that the same problem may exist, which may not help you a lot, other than to eliminate the wireless aspect of it.
Right.
But that's certainly something, because then we won't have to confound the issue with whether it's wireless or the two-wired extension that you get out from there.
Sure. And it's funny. It just seems to be the Yahoo homepage, because when I, you know, when I go back to my old service, the font size and everything's fine, even on the two-wire.
Okay, so when you're browsing other sites other than the Yahoo site?
Yeah.
And when you're connected, so it's only when you're connected through your the SBC DSL
yeah.
connection.
Yeah, it seems to be. Well, even when I use my old service, other than the other than Yahoo,
like a dial-up service.
Yeah. Well, it even recognizes the DSL. It even recognizes the DSL on two-wire. And the font size is fine on that. That's what I can't figure out.
I don't have – this sounds like something that would require sitting down and investigating a little bit. I don't have a real good suggestion other than to make sure that it has nothing to do with the wireless. Just plug in your laptop directly. And
okay.
if you can actually then simplify the problem before you call for support, if you can tell the folks at SBC, for example, that I'm wired directly in and I've got giant fonts, and yet when I dial up, I don't have giant fonts. The only difference is how I'm connecting. That narrows it down enough so that they can perhaps give you some additional feedback. Yeah,
very good. Yeah, because when I go to when I go to my other service,
and point that out to them. Assuming once you've got it down to the simplest possible case with the simplest differences, that's what they want to hear, and then hopefully that will allow them to direct you to some sort of solution. Because
very
they can
good.
No longer really
keep...
say it's a problem with something else because you've eliminated sure. those.
I'll just keep narrowing it down.
Exactly what you need to do.
I was about ready to take it to a computer guru. Somebody
well, that works well, too. But, on your own, narrow it down as much as you can.
Okay. Thank you.
Quite
good
welcome.
Luck. Next, we talk with a listener on line two in New York. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling to go back to the two callers ago that was asking about some software for audio recording.
Yes.
And typically, I do a lot of this using the GNU/Linux operating system, but for Windows, there's programs are available as well. One is Audacity that will handle the recording end of business for the guy. Another, if he's going to be making MP3s, wants to make the sound levels consistent across all of the things he's doing. You might want to look at a program called MP3 Gain. That's all one word. And the third piece of software he might be looking for is something that will remove the hissing and, the tape noise itself. And I know there are programs available for Windows to do that. But usually with those three pieces of software, he'll be able to do any kind of audio recording he's looking for.
You were breaking up a little bit on that. Are you using voice over internet by any chance?
Yeah, of course.
So we didn't quite get the names of some
yeah.
of those. So if you could just repeat the names of the software again.
MP3 Gain.
MP3 Gain.
Yeah, that will adjust the level.
Sure.
Okay.
And, of course, you could do it.
So they can be consistent throughout the whole
sure.
work that he's doing. Audacity.
Oops. Lost you?
Yep.
Audacity.
We're missing.
Boy.
I think maybe the level is dropping enough that it's cutting out at this end.
Yeah.
But appreciate there is software out there. I'm sorry that we weren't able to have a better connection. And yes, the one for tape hiss. Thank you for mentioning that as well. And if you do, or if the prior caller does a Google search for tape hiss reduction, that would certainly. Help, and the software is getting pretty good at that. Appreciate your call, and I'm sorry. Are you still there?
Yes, I think the connection is kind of poor. So, okay, thank you.
Yeah, but thank you for calling.
Thanks for calling. Too bad about the connection. And I think we're going to have to wrap it up there. We're out of time. Maybe one more quick question here, Peter.
All right.
Making the decision to switch to Firefox, how do you decide whether or not it's worth it? I know that it's gaining a little bit of ground on Internet Explorer, and we had a commentary earlier today from Bill Hammack in this week's essay on engineering and life. He likes it very much. He says it rarely crashes, and it's quite robust, and He thinks it's got a good future.
Well, I think it's got a good future as well. I don't think it's going to actually replace Internet Explorer completely, but it is making inroads. It's up to about 7% market share from zero, which is pretty good, and that 7% has come at the expense of Internet Explorer. It's important, whatever browser you're using, to keep updates. Now, Firefox will notify you of that, but they're finding security breaches in all software. It's so complex. This is open source, so it works pretty well. There are some sites that use technologies such as ActiveX and Visual Basic that Firefox simply can't show. It doesn't support those, which means it's more secure in one aspect, but it also simply will not work at some sites. So at the time is not yet that you can sort of dump it completely. You'll need to keep Internet Explorer around for those sites. And the other thing that will be very interesting, because Microsoft is clearly feeling the heat, they are going to be releasing Internet Explorer 7.0 before too much longer, and it'll be interesting. And that's also going to have the tabbed interface, so you can have multiple pages and such.
Very good. That's where we'll leave it for May's Computers and You program. And then we'll do this again next month on the third Thursday of the month. So that will be the third Thursday in the month of June. Our guest this afternoon has been Peter Kimball, Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the FAST 3 Consortium Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. My name is Celeste Quinn. It's 9 minutes before 2 o'clock. Let's turn things over now to Todd Gleason. He's going to bring us up to date on what happened today on the Chicago Board of Trade. Todd?
Thank you much, Celeste. As important as what happened on the Chicago Board of Trade is what was happening across the Midwest. Rainfall, though it appeared to be fairly slight in many areas, did fall across a portion of Illinois, Indiana. Not in Minnesota, though. They really don't need it. They've had some a lot of rainfall there, and there is some speculation that the crop has been hurt by too much rainfall at this point. And Iowa complaining on their side, at least from the farmers, that they have not seen the sun as much as they would like. And they're having some problems getting the corn and the soy crops off to a good start. It all really did not make too much of an impact in Chicago to the upside, more so the rainfall in Illinois and Indiana did, and that pushed the futures lower for both the soybeans and the corn. Wheat was down today, too. July contract had a high today of 317.5 in the wheat pit at Chicago, the low at 308.25, and the settlement price there at $3.09. They were down 5.5 cents for that nearby soft red winter wheat contract, and it happens to be the harvest month. September futures, 326 the high, the low at 317.5, a settlement price at 318.75, down 6 for the day, and December futures on their seasonal trend down as futures go into the harvest month. Usually prices tend to trend lower. December contract at 337.25 high, low at 328 in the wheat pit, and a settlement there at $3.28.75, down 6 for the day. March contract now 346.5 the high, the low at 338, settled at 338.75, down 6.25, and the May futures in the soft red winter wheat pit from the Chicago Board of Trade, a 346 high, low at 342, settlement price at $3.42.75, and they were down 6.25 for the day. From the corn pit, nearby July contract to 11.5, the high, the low at 209.25, settlement price at 209.5, down 1.25. September futures, 219.5, the high, the low at 217.5, settled 217.75, down 1.25 for the day. And the December futures, 229.5, the high, the low at 227.5, settlement price there, $2.27.75, they were off 1 for the day. March contract at 237.5 high, low at 235.75, settled 236, down 1, and the May corn, 242 the high, the low at 240.75, settled on that low, down 3/4. July futures for next year in the corn pit, 245.75 the high, the low at 244.5, and a settlement price at 244.75, and they finished the day down 3/4. Stay with us for the closing market report when we'll talk with Dan Zwicker this afternoon of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Get his take on all of the technical trade that has been pushing the market to some extent over the last week, much of it weather-driven as well. But when you combine those two things, futures tend to go to certain spots, and we'll find out whether that's been the case or not when we talk with Dan this afternoon about the corn, the soybeans, and the wheat. And then a little bit later on in that program, we'll continue our expanded closing market report this afternoon, going right up to 3 o'clock, taking the full hour Central Time. We'll take up Ag Policy Radio this week, the conservation titles of the Farm Bill. We'll speak with American Farmland Trust President Ralph Grassi. That all happens starting around 6 after the hour, 2 o'clock Central Time this afternoon. Stay with us for all that programming during the closing market report. July futures in the oats pit now, 136.5 the high, the low at 131.5. Their settlement price, $1.32.25. They were off 4 for the day. September's were down 3.75, had a high of 40.25, a low at 37.25, and a settlement price down on that low at $1.37.25, down 3.75. From the soy complex, nearby July future, 634.5 the high, low at 628.5, settled at 629.25, down 4 in the August future, 634.5 high, low at 628.5 in the bean pit, and the August soybean settled 629.25, down 3.25. September futures, 632 the high, the low at 625.75. Settled there at $6.26, they were down 4 cents. And November, this year harvest month, 632 the high, the low at 625.5. New crop November beans down 4.25 today, $6.26, the final price. January futures on this Thursday afternoon, 633 high, low at 628, settled 628.75, down 3.5. And the March soybeans for next year, down 5.75 today, 628.25, the settlement price, with a high of 33.5 and a low at 27.5. Bean meal July futures, 197.30 the high, the low at 194.60, settled 195.60. They were down a dollar even. August bean meal at 197.10 on the high, the low at 194.60, settled 195.70. They were down 80 cents. Bean oil July futures, 22.22 the high, the low at 22.01, settled just above that at 22.04. They were down 22. And the August soybean oil, 22.28 on the high today, low at 22.10, settled 22.13. They were off 21. Now here's Celeste Quinn with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Another mostly lower day today for livestock prices. May feeder cattle, 111.85 the high, 111.55 the low. The settlement, 111.75, up 15. August, 112.65 the high, 112 even the low. The settlement, 112.32.5, that unchanged. September, 111.62.5 the high, the low, 111.05. The settlement, 111.17.5, that down 35. June live cattle, 86 even the high, 85.55 the low, 85.82.5 the settlement, that down 25. August, 85.65. August live cattle, the high 85.65, the low 85.27.5, the settlement 85.47.5, that down 32.5. June lean hog, 74.15, the high 73.50, the low, June lean hogs, the low today 73.35, the settlement 73.47.5, that down 47.5. July, 73.35 the high, 72.60 the low. The settlement, 73.02.5, that down 10. August, 72.65 the high, 71.57.5 the low. 71.65 the settlement, that down 102.5. October lean hog, 62.95 the high, 62 even the low, 62.35 the settlement, that down a quarter. And May bellies, 81.55 the high, 80.40 the low, the settlement 80.60, that finished up 40. The Dow is up 3 points at 10,468, the NASDAQ 5 higher at 2036, the S&P 500 up 3 at 1188.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate,